The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Deposed Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his wife Celia Flores were arraigned in New York in a courtroom yesterday. The pair have pleaded not guilty to drugs and weapons charges, with Maduro striking a defiant tone, stating he was the president of Venezuela and had been kidnapped. In a moment, we'll get more details about what happened in court about a significant bet placed on Maduro's removal in quite a coincidentally timely fashion. But first, we're going to the Venezuelan border and Sam Kiley, World Affairs Editor with The Independent. Sam, good morning.
Morning.
What are you gleaning from people coming and going across the border about the attitude of ordinary Venezuelans to what's happened?
Well, it's very interesting and rather mixed. I mean, the first thing is that it's not very dramatic. There are no floods of refugees coming out of Venezuela in the way that there have been in the past. 8 million people have fled since Maduro took power or was given power, had inherited power from his predecessor, Hugo Chavez. So there is just a steady movement of people backwards and forwards, mostly people trading between the two countries. There is a significant, obviously, Venezuelan community here in Cucuta, and the attitude among them is that they are waiting, and I think this is repeated by people actually inside Venezuela too, that they're waiting to see what comes next. There is deep resentment that a foreign power has violated the sovereignty of their nation, but at the same time, this was a deeply unpopular president who, by any standards, stole the elections in 2024, has provoked, in the view of his critics, terrible relations with the United States that resulted in 2019 with a crippling oil embargo. This is a country with arguably the biggest oil reserves on the planet, but was facing astronomical levels of inflation and poverty. So resulting in this exodus through his reign. So he's a very, very unpopular man. There are other people, and this is the rub, which is why people are keeping very quiet about what they think. The security apparatus is still very much still in play in that country. There has been a change at the top, but there has not been regime change. Indeed, Donald Trump is saying that he wants to work with the regime, and that includes the Minister of Defense, Minister of Interior, two of the more hated men in the country, and the brother and sister Rodriguez team as head of the National Assembly and now the newly appointed president, means that as far as Venezuelans are concerned, they could be facing more of the same with the added pressure of America on them, and they don't know what is going to happen. Donald Trump is saying he wants access to the oil, access for American businesses, but the drug cartels that exist in that country are still there, and so on. So it's an incendiary mix, and everybody's afraid someone's going to light it.
Now, the question of the current president nominated Delcy Rodriguez, and she was very defiant at the beginning, saying that Maduro is the president, da-da-da-da, and we will fight, we are an independent nation, we will be nobody's colony. But then she's changed her tune because she sent out a message on social media saying, a message from Venezuela to the world and to the United States. Venezuela reaffirms its commitment to peace and peaceful coexistence. Our country aspires to live without external threats in an environment of respect and international cooperation. We believe that global peace is built by first guaranteeing peace within each nation. So has she cut a deal with the US?
Well, she's either cut a deal or more likely, because in that same period that you refer to between when she was defiant and then cooperative with the Americans, Donald Trump said, we are going to make the leadership in Venezuela do what we want by using force if necessary, and threatening a second wave of strikes, but also threatening as the targeting of the regime if they don't do what the US wants them to do. This is an effort, I think, from the American perspective to conduct occupation light. They saw the catastrophe that followed in Iraq when Saddam Hussein was toppled, but more importantly, the Ba'ath Party was removed from the administration, which was everybody. And then fairly soon, the military of some 400,000 people were sacked, putting large numbers of battle-hardened, trained and armed men onto the streets full of bitterness and resentment. So they're clearly trying to avoid that in Venezuela and try to bully a new administration into doing what they want them to do. What the Americans are not doing either is saying that they wish to install the democratically popular alternatives, the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize or her party, which without doubt won the 2024 elections in the August of that year. So, you know, there has been this change of heart from the president. Also, if you look at the dynamic of how this operation was conducted with no American casualties, the air defenses were overwhelmed, but they had significant air defenses in that country. They should have been able to shoot down one or two helicopters. It all looked a bit too easy. And I think there's no question at all that there has been collaboration between insiders within the regime and the US administration to make at least the decapitation possible.
So the idea that you've got new freedoms, et cetera, if this regime stays in place, cooperating with the US in terms of oil restoration and all the rest of it, Trump doesn't care about human rights, as we see the way he treats his own people, never mind anyone from a different country. Things might not get that much better for Venezuelans.
No, I mean, I think we could, who knows what we'll see next. And the Venezuelans are going to get the biggest vote in this. But they have a choice. They may be looking at a future of kind of authoritarian capitalism on a sort of Chinese model or indeed a Russian model. And Russia has been a key influencer in this on the Trump administration. We're now seeing the evolution of a Trump doctrine, which would look to the critics of Donald Trump, and I'm very much among them, as if he's carving out influence and getting carte blanche to operate in the area that he wants his American sphere of influence, which is the United States, leaving Russia and the former Soviet Union to Vladimir Putin and Asia to China. Now, that is the direction of travel. And the people of Venezuela may decide to rise against this administration, but they've tried that in the past and failed. So it isn't clear what will happen next.
You mentioned Maria Corina Machado, who won the Nobel Peace Prize, much to Trump's chagrin. And then he said, well, she told me I deserved it, blah, blah, blah. She was on Sean Hannity's program last evening, and she assured Donald Trump through Hannity that she'd love to share the Nobel Peace Prize with him. I would certainly love to be able to personally tell him that we believe the Venezuelan people certainly want to give the Nobel Peace Prize to him and to share it with him. I believe he deserved it. I think he has proven to the world what he means. January the 3rd will go down in history as the day justice defeated tyranny. It's a milestone. It's not only huge for Venezuelans, but a huge step for humanity. And this is a woman that Trump said wasn't really capable of running Venezuela.
Well, it's obviously a woman who is trying to do a bit of Trump whispering along the lines of people like Keir Starmer and others. I mean, it would be bizarre if she believed what she was saying.
But she abases herself publicly, which certainly has dented her reputation, I would think, among most right-thinking people, that she offers this great day for humanity. And she literally has abased herself before Trump.
Well, she's doing so now in the hope that she will end up being installed, one assumes, and then will be able to take Venezuela towards a democracy. But that actually, even if the Americans wanted to do that, could be the most dangerous option possible, and by no means resulting in a peaceful democracy in Venezuela. You've got to factor into that the massive military and security organizations that have a deep vested interest through criminal activities, notably drug running, but also gold exploitation. On top of that, you've got actual criminal organizations that are very large and transnational, heavily armed and extremely violent. And then you've got rebel movements that are partly Colombian, partly Venezuelan along their mutual border, like FARC and the FLN. So there are a great number of organizations that have a vested interest in continuing the status quo and in not seeing Venezuela return to a a country that is run democratically and under strict rule of law with peace and stability enforced from the centre all over. There's almost no player there with a gun that has got a vested interest in that.
Sam, thank you very much for joining us on the programme this morning. That's Sam Kiley, who is World Affairs Editor with The Independent. Terry Sheridan joins us now. Terry, Senior Director of News at WSHU Public Radio. Terry, good morning.
Good morning to you, Pat.
Hey, listening to Sam there, I know, but we wanted to talk to you about the arraignment of the Maduros in court yesterday. Was it very dramatic?
Not really. I mean, an arraignment in the United States is very pro forma. It is very short. It is basically an introduction to the legal system. So there were no speeches. There were no presenting of cases. It's basically just like, these are the charges. Do you understand them? Do you have a lawyer? And we'll see you in court, you know, later on. So I think that that was a shock to Maduro, who thought he was going to get to say much more than he did, even though he did say, in his few words, he did say a lot that may lead to where he's going to or how he's going to fight the charges.
Okay, so we will see him, I believe, on St. Patrick's Day. March 17th is when he'll make his next appearance. It'll be interesting to see the kind of legal representation he gets. I mean, I doubt he's going to be depending on a public prosecutor or a public defender. So which of the high-profile lawyers wants to make a name for him or herself will stand up to defend Maduro?
Well, we already have several that are in line. And, you know, he's also had several that, you know, were there yesterday along with him. People who have represented or lawyers who have represented foreign leaders, foreign business leaders, high profile CEOs in the United States. So, yes, he already has a legal team. Whether it's the same one he'll eventually go to court with, he already is putting together a legal team.
Now, I want to play you a short clip. This was aboard Air Force One on Sunday, and President Trump was asked whether or not he had spoken to oil companies about the raid in Venezuela. If so, when and where? So have a listen to this very short clip.
I have.
Which ones?
All of them. They want to go in so badly.
Did you speak to them before the operation took place?
And yes.
Did you maybe tip them off?
Before and after, and they want to go in. And they're going to do a great job for the people of Venezuela.
Okay, that's the interesting thing. He tipped them off before he went in, and then he talked to them after he went in, and they're all enthusiastic about going in. However, that's not necessarily the way the oil companies themselves are articulating the situation. How will Congress feel about oil companies being tipped off and not Congress?
Well, what you're seeing now is obviously the Democrats in Congress and the Democratic leadership are saying, wait a minute, you know, you can call it a police action or, you know, a law enforcement action. But, you know, you basically sent U.S. troops into harm's way. You have a constitutional requirement and a constitutional obligation to at least notify Congress of your intent to do so. Doesn't necessarily mean you need a vote, you know, immediately, but you need to notify Congress. So Democrats are saying, you know, what happened? Why did you do this? We all know why, but why did you do this? Some Republicans, especially those who lead the committees, the military or intelligence committees, are saying the same thing. But most congressmen and senators are falling in behind the president. Senate Majority Leader John Thune said he didn't think it was a problem that the president didn't notify Congress beforehand, or at least consult Congress, because he said, and he repeated what the President Trump said about, well, there would be leaks about this. But no, among the Democratic Party and among Republicans in Congress who lead these specific committees, there is anger at the president for not notifying Congress.
Now, this brings me to the people he did tip off. He tipped off Big Oil. And there's reporting of a gambler on a site called Polymarket, a crypto-based betting platform, earned more than $400,000 on a bet made just moments before Trump went in.
This is someone, again, according to the reporting, this is someone who opened an account about a week before, on December 27th. And basically a very small bet that Maduro would be overthrown or taken out by the end of January. And throughout the week, the bet increased in increments. Finally, it was something around $36,000 that the person put on, and he increased it, or he or she increased it in the evening before the raid actually happened. Now, in the United States right now, there is no law against anybody doing something like that. The only thing that could happen is if it was a member of the Pentagon, a member of the military, who knew, there could be some prosecution there. But if it was a member of the general public who just happened to get, you know, who was basically a oil executive, say, there's nothing that they could do about that right now.
Now, speaking of a member of the military, someone who's still nominally a member of the military and could be called up at any time is Senator Mark Kelly. And Hegseth is going after him to get him demoted. Not that it'll have any major effect on him. Could affect his pension rights from the military, but not any pension he would accrue from his political career. But this is an act of vengeance because he simply told the troops in a video message with other politicians not to obey illegal orders.
Yeah, that's right. Now, Hegseth is back down from threats to court-martial, which actually could have some jail time along with it. So he's starting administrative actions and administrative proceedings. It's over that video. He and five other Democratic lawmakers told the troops, you do not have to and you should disobey or ignore any illegal order. So Hegseth has called that seditious. He is... has started not only the administrative hearings to or proceedings to either strip him or reduce his pension, but has also put a letter of censor into his permanent file. It sounds like he's in school. But among that, in that letter, it's basically citing criticism of Kelly of Hegseth. Over different things over the past 6 months, and says your role as a U.S. senator does not release you from, you know, this duty. So he's going after not only the video, but going after Kelly for criticizing him. I mean, let's not forget that Kelly is an astronaut. He's been to space four times, led several space shuttle missions. He was a Navy aviator and flew 29 combat missions. So he is an American hero. He's also the husband of former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, who was shot in the head at a constituent event in 2011. So Kelly's not backing down on this either. He's going right back at Hegseth.
Very good. Terry, thank you very much for joining us. Terry Sheridan, who's a senior news editor at WSHU Public Radio.
News Talk's Cash Machine. The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.